Back on Get Up, and before we roll on, let's just go back to last Monday when everyone here made me feel short. Take a look at the height I was up against.
That's the story of my life.
It was pretty rough. And so I said this. For the producers of this fine program, there will never be another day where there's not at least one person shorter than me booked for the show again. I feel ridiculous standing here right now. Just let the record show that. Okay, having said it, where the hell is Graziano when you need him?
Okay. And transition to today.
So you said Monday?
Yeah, that was Monday.
I believe that was a day at sea. I think we were just hanging out and drinking pina coladas.
Graziano, well, look, Graziano was on a cruise, and I was standing here just being dwarfed by the group around me.
I was in a lounge chair, so you wouldn't have been able to tell.
Graziano at sea. How do you feel about your role on this team?
I feel fantastic about my role on this team. 100%.
Due to height issues.
It's okay. I'm good.
With that, we welcome you back.
I am what I am.
It's hour number two of our program. We are presented by ESPN Bet. Lots of football today. Mel is ready to go. Dan and RG3 with us. But let's run the floor through the NBA playoff action from yesterday. Dame Lillard had 35 in the first half, Jay Will. And Milwaukee takes game one from Indiana. What is your reaction, no Giannis?
It's a great win for them to defend home court. I think a lot of people just naturally assume that Milwaukee wasn't going to have a chance in this series. I'm going to tell you something. Tyrese Halliburton has not fully been himself since the injury around All-Star break. His numbers have been down 7 shot attempts in 37 minutes, which is a major issue because you need Tyrese Halliburton to be next level in order for them to get by a team, which is the reason why they brought Dame Lillard in.
Who's going to win this series, Alan?
I'm on the Pacers on this one. I think it just took them a half to get their sea legs under them. Not a lot of experience playoff-wise for that team. They were guarding Dame Lillard one-on-one to start this game, and he got on a heater. That was a statement half for Lillard to remind you that, yes, it is Dame time. Don't forget, Halliburton did do that. Remember when they knocked him out of the in-season tournament, so there's always that going on. Second half, Pacers were much, much better.
The most important sentence is the one on your screen at the bottom. There is no clarity on when Giannis will be ready to play. Without him, maybe they get through this round, maybe they don't, but it's tough to picture them making the kind of run they would want. Let's go to the West. Clippers-Mavs yesterday, for a game that was as theoretically one-sided as this was, the second half was incredibly entertaining, I must say. But that said, Alan made the statement, and I'll let Alan make it again here. What do you think about the winner of this first-round matchup?
Well, both teams are built, especially with stars, experience, bigs that are active, and also good coaching. These two teams, to me, could be the biggest threat to knock off the Denver Nuggets before they get to the NBA Finals. Just again, by the way they're built, Jay. And they're actually playing each other in the first round, so only one of them's going to survive, obviously. But when you look at how they're built, and I've always felt this about the Clippers all season long, until, of course, they kind of like let go of the rope at the end of the season for some reason, and Ty Lue had to get them back on track. That first half, you talk about statements, that was a statement that the Clippers are a team that you do not want to overlook.
I like both teams. I just don't know why we keep overlooking Minnesota. Like, we know you hear stuff floating around, Anthony Edwards and Michael Jordan-esque. Like, I'm not saying they belong in the same sentence, but the style and demeanor in which they play defensively, how physical they are, how they can play Mike Conley on that team now is a different point of attack.
Like,
they are extremely built to execute down the stretch and have the size as well. I think they're the best matchup for Denver.
If they get out of this matchup with Phoenix, and assuming the Nuggets beat the Lakers, that would be the second round matchup, and then maybe the winner of this will be waiting in the conference final. One other thing. It became a big deal before we get to Embiid here on social media yesterday. I think Brian Scalabrine in Boston was the first person who questioned this play right here by Caleb Martin. This is in the final minute of a game that had been decided. It was coming out of a stoppage, to your point, Jay. It was not a timeout, but it was a stoppage for review. And he comes running in there and sort of takes out Jason Tatum. Do you believe this was a dirty play?
No, I do not at all. I actually think it's irresponsible to say that. If you actually go back and watch the tape in slow-mo, look at Caleb Martin's eyes. He's tracking the basketball. And look at his course, the angle of attack he's taking towards the rim. And look at the fact that Jrue Holiday bumps him off that course. And when he bumps him off that course, that's what initiates the contact with Jason Tatum. And I'm not sitting up here on national TV talking about Miami not being a physical team. I get how that can be a part of the narrative around this team, but that in particular was not a dirty play at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's on brand for Miami to play hard on every play, no matter what the score is. That's what they do. You always have to be prepared for that. I'm with Jay on this one. I mean, PK Subban would love the hip check that he threw there, but that's really what it was. He goes in to basically put his body on somebody, which is what you're supposed to do in the playoffs. It's a box out. He went to go hip to hip, did not expect Tatum to jump when he did, so it looked a lot worse. And I also go with this. If there was intent, does he walk away or does he reach down and go, oh, my bad, and which is exactly what he does at the end of this play. Jaylen Brown does the teammate thing and says, get out of here, we got him. But the way Martin reacted told me there was no real intent there. But because it's Miami, the reputation precedes them, is always going to be those, oh, that's an on-brand kind of play.
You want to wonder a little bit about why Jason Tatum is in the game at that point. I suppose you can do that. But one way or another, it is what it is. He wasn't seriously injured, and that's or injured at all.
I also tell you, Green, it's a great lesson for Boston moving forward because when a shot goes up, nobody just tracks the ball like this.
Right.
Like, that's not how you're going to win an NBA championship. Everybody knows from the time you're in third grade, fourth grade playing basketball, shot goes up, you look to check somebody, box somebody out.
You cannot ease up when you're playing against Miami, no matter what the score is.
Meanwhile, overwhelmingly the most important story in the NBA playoffs will resume tonight, and we will see what is written. Joel Embiid currently listed as questionable for game two at the Garden after another scare at the end in the first half in which he was playing so well the other night. You've seen the play by now, throwing the ball off the backboard to himself to dunk it and then going down clutching that surgically repaired knee. He would return in the second half. For those just joining us, and here are the numbers. I mean, it's as simple as this. With Embiid on the court, the Sixers are the better team, and without him on the court, they're not even close. And that's probably the story of the series. With a healthy Joel Embiid, the Sixers would be the favorite, regardless of where these games are being played. And without him, one might suggest they have almost no chance. And Alan, you were literally standing in the tunnel with him. So for those just joining us, take me through what you saw.
Yeah, well, when he walked off the court, I was right there as he walked past me. His eyes, he never blinked. He looked straight down, and he had this look in his eyes. And I thought to myself, he knows, like, something bad just happened. He knows he might be done. I did not expect to see him in the second half. I waited in the tunnel coming out for the second half because you kind of, a lot of people walking by, you want to wait till all that dies down. So all the players are already on the floor. Then all of a sudden I feel a presence walk by me, an immense presence, and that's Joel Embiid. And I could not believe he walked by, and I was like, holy bleep, man. Like, looking at him, like, you're really going back out there. And he did, and it just shows you the kind of courage and the intent that he has to be there for his team. But I'm going to throw out a theory here that I didn't bring up earlier. I had a theory about this because you saw already he had tweaked it once before the end of the regular season. And then he had not been the same since. That play-in game, he also was dragging a leg around, did not play great in that game, at least took a lot of jumpers. I thought the Sixers looked at this like, we're going to get all we can out of Joel Embiid in game one. We're going to try to steal game one. That gives us time. You could sit him for game two because they don't play game three in Philadelphia until Thursday.
Right.
Buys him 4 days break. So they were thinking, we're going to get everything we can out of him and try to get this win. And they were very close to doing that. But now they're kind of stuck because they did end up losing this game.
They looked like the better team. For those of you who didn't watch it, they looked like the better team in the first half. And then he got hurt. And then they didn't look like the better team anymore. So, Jay, there are people asking the question.
Yes.
Should Joel Embiid be out there as clearly hobbled as he is?
Well, first off, I'm taking intake from my superstar player. And I'm seeing how that knee is doing today. If it's inflamed, how is he walking around? Is he gingerly? Can he go? One of the biggest things that we were talking about in the back that nobody's really openly talking about, Greeny, is the level of conditioning. Is it where it needs to be at for a guy like Joel Embiid to play and not further injure that or have compensation injuries? And that's a bigger conversation that you have to think about for Joel Embiid. Because if you're thinking about the long-term franchise future, it's around Joel Embiid. But at least this question, is it?
Is what?
Is the long-term franchise perspective around the future of Joel Embiid?
Like,
is it? Because it's turning into this conversation, Greeny, that we're always talking about Joel Embiid being hurt. And now I'm not minimizing the injury.
This time of year.
It's a significant injury. Yeah. Same reason we talk about Kawhi. I get it as basketball players. I'm not getting into a load management conversation, any of that. But it really turns into, are we always going to gamble if our star players?
What is your option? What are you telling me is your, what's choice B? Is choice B moving on from Joel Embiid? Because then I'll take choice A 100 out of 100 times and take my chances.
The bigger question is this, are they built to win a championship this year? Are they good enough with Embiid? Clearly not 100%, right? He's never going to get to 100%. You don't play your way into shape this time of year. It's impossible. So are they there? If not, you have an offseason that you can go out and acquire high-level additions to this team, which could include Paul George, Donovan Mitchell, somebody like that with Tyrese Maxey, and then next year with Embiid now with a whole offseason of rest, doesn't need to play in the Olympics. Now you can build yourself into a true contender. Is it worth it now to play some games and have it cost you something for next season?
I know we live in a world where everything needs to be definitive, but it's irresponsible if you're a general manager of a franchise and you're not taking all the intake of what all your options are, and you're not realistically thinking about the injury habits that have occurred and the injury histories that have occurred, and you're trying to look out for a future window related to around Joel Embiid. Like, you can say, hey, I'll just take option A, but that's not realistically the way you're going to look at it. Like, if he's injured now, like, what are the chances of a guy of that size and that frame remaining uninjured in the future if he's already injury prone? I'm not saying that you just trade Joel Embiid. What I'm saying is it does warrant conversation.
Fair enough. And we can have that conversation next week. Today, yeah. I'm asking you the question, should he play tonight?
If he's able to go, I'm not going to tell Joel Embiid not to play.
Here's the problem. The one thing that keeps coming back into my head, that you can, I don't, look, I'm not a doctor. I don't know anything about anything. All I'm saying is, if it's a meniscus, if they're telling him you can't do any long-standing damage to that knee, I'm old enough to remember when they told Kevin Durant that, too.
Yep.
And so were you. And I know they're different. Totally different injuries. Yeah. Oh, I know that. I know that. I'm just saying, if there's any possibility...
You're always going to protect yourself.
You've got to protect your asset.
More than just the injury. It's
limping around.
It's also conditioning.
That's why we said conditioning.
And when you have that conditioning issue, with the body gets tired in fourth quarters. He was 0 for 5 and didn't get a single rebound in the fourth quarter of this game. Couldn't move. And if that's the issue, you're going to break down and something else could happen. And that's what you're
worried about. I would send him out tonight with the chance to play on Thursday.
I was busy this morning when Fink asked me for my pick. I'm changing it on the fly. You see Sixers under my name, but I don't believe it anymore. I'm changing my mind. I was in a hurry and Fink asked me for my pick. I'm waffling on my own selection. Meantime, the selections are all coming up in 3 days, people. The draft round one is on the way and we have huge questions. Who will be number two? Are the Patriots ready to deal? And if so, who's coming up to get the quarterback? We'll answer all those as we continue. Plus, will it be one and done for LeBron and the Lakers? Do the Nuggets have their number? Is there anything the Lakers can do? We'll answer those questions next. Watch and get up on ESPN. Shopping for Mother's Day is usually a challenge because you wait until the last minute, but Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day. Whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by category like fragrance, handbags, and more, or gift lists like for the mom who has everything, pre-wrapped gifts or gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, and Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th. It'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. Delicious, meet nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. We welcome you back live to Get Up. We are live, as always, from the Seaport. We are brought to you by Patron. Perfection starts with Patron, and nothing could be more perfect than bringing in Dan Orlovsky for this hour of Get Up. We are counting down the minutes until Thursday night in Detroit. And Dan has put together, we gave Danny a little homework assignment. Dan, you put together some draft deals you want to see get made this week, starting in Seattle. Go.
Yeah, I want to see if the Seattle Seahawks will get aggressive and try to go get J.J. McCarthy. It's a sneaky team for me, and I know they don't have a ton of picks, Greeny, but two reasons. One, Geno Smith's 34 years old. The future is coming at some point. Two, Mike McDonald, their new head coach, last year was with Baltimore. The year before was with Michigan. He knows J.J. McCarthy intimately well, and I think J.J. McCarthy, while not being a top three talent, is somebody that is going to play top 10 to top 12 quarterback play at the NFL level. I've called them the more athletic version of Kirk Cousins. I want to see if Seattle gets a little sneaky and aggressive on draft night. Minnesota, whatever quarterback they go up and get is the front runner for offensive rookie of the year. I'll start with J.J. McCarthy. If he steps into that offense, it's custom made for him. Under center, play action pass, built with rhythm. He's got great feet when it comes to tying the progression and the rhythm of a pass game. Drake May, I think if he had to play for Minnesota right away, would struggle because he doesn't have that stuff. But you're banking on Kevin O'Connell and that staff developing and working with him while Sam Darnold plays for them. The Denver Broncos, you don't matter in the AFC West over the next 8 to 10 years until you get a quarterback. Sean Payton, go get Andy Dalton. That's who Bo Nix is. It's a guy that he's not the same player that he was early on in his Auburn career when he ran around and tried to make every single play. He's become so much more refined. He's played a ton of college football, athletic enough to fit in the version of the NFL offenses right now, but also adept to throwing the football downfield. Las Vegas Raiders, I just told you that the Broncos don't matter. I'll go to the next level. You don't have a stinking chance in the AFC West over the next 8 to 10 years until you get a star at quarterback. Go be aggressive and get Jaden Daniels. Everyone talks about the assets that are needed to go get up. You think the Chiefs regret going to get Patrick, or the Bills regret going to get Josh Allen? He's an unbelievably physically talented player that is refined as a passer in the pocket, and I want to see that team matter in the AFC West finally.
Okay, fascinating. So all of these are interesting. Not one of them isn't, but let's start with that last one because Graziano, there's only one way that can happen, and that is if Washington is not just dead set on taking Jaden Daniels at number two. They can end this entire conversation. They haven't behaved, at least last week, and we've touched on it, like they had made that decision, but they certainly can between now and Thursday. What are you hearing?
This is around the time when things really solidify for teams, right? Yeah. Like this is they'll set their board, they'll decide who they want to pick, and then they'll have meetings over the next couple of days where they go through the medicals one more time. And they ask everybody, you know, who they want involved in the decision, you know, any reservations on this. And then they'll decide to go ahead. Because they know they obviously know what's going to happen in front of them at one, so they know what their menu is in terms of what they're looking to select. So, yeah, if Jaden Daniels is the pick, and I think there's a strong chance that's who it is, then I think what they'll do is they'll spend the next day or two really making sure and dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's on that pick.
To the point that you made earlier, if they go Drake May, which would be a surprise but perhaps not a shock.
Or McCarthy.
Or McCarthy.
Right.
Then the Patriots phone starts ringing off the hook. Mel, what will be your reaction to that? We know, like you touched on this a little bit earlier, if it is not Jaden Daniels but one of the other quarterbacks who goes off the board at two, what will you say?
I'll say get some offensive line help wherever that quarterback is. And if it's J.J. McCarthy, you talk about Jaden Daniels or Drake May, one of those three. J.J. would shock me. Drake May would not shock me. Certainly Jaden, I think, would be the pick. They're doing a great job not talking about it, not letting anybody know, throwing everything out there. But for Jaden Daniels or Drake May, they went and got interior offensive line help in free agency, Washington did. They need the bookends. They need the tackle. So that offensive tackle spot has to be addressed second round moving forward. I think they get two, maybe three offensive linemen in this draft. They need as much help there as the Dallas Cowboys do. So the offensive line's the priority. I would go Jaden Daniels at two. It wouldn't shock me if it was Drake. It would shock me if it was J.J. But Jaden or Drake, I would take Jaden Daniels if I had to make that move.
RG3, should they even be taking phone calls? I mean, should they be running the pick up there, or should Washington be open to trading that second pick?
No, Greeny, Washington should not be open to trading that second pick. And everyone's kind of said it already. If Jaden Daniels is not the pick for the Commanders, everyone in the league is going to be calling the Patriots to see if they can come up and get him. That is a clear sign that he is the second best quarterback in this draft class. And I'll say this. Everyone talks about Jaden Daniels' ability to be an athlete and run. If you take away his running ability and you just watch his tape and see him process pre-snap, post-snap, decision-making, the control at the line of scrimmage, he is still the second best quarterback in this draft class. So that's why he's such a dynamic player. And I think that Washington needs to take him because he helps them win today, tomorrow, and 5 years from now. He is the singular most important pick in this draft, because if he's not taken by Washington, I feel like other teams are going to give up a ransom to come up and get him.
I think a lot of people agree with that. Orlovsky, show people the tape for those who haven't seen it and only see the splash plays. What tape do we have this morning for Jaden Daniels?
Yeah, I think Jaden's the best quarterback in the draft. I haven't wavered from that. Greeny, you're trying to find flaws of these young men. He was the number one quarterback coming out of high school. So you're trying to find the things that might hold up their development in the NFL. This is nitpicking. All right, three-man rush by Missouri defensively. You have a spy on Jaden. Now, there are moments when, as you clear out one side of the field, the shallow cross is going to pop open, where Jaden will drop his eyes and try to become a runner and take off just a fraction too soon. Now, he resets and finds a shallow cross here for a completion. Again, this is my one nitpick flaw in his game. I think his game is very clear. Pay attention to his eyes here, okay? As he sets, he's going to read that left side of the field, right side of our screen. Here comes the shallow cross. Now, he is going to, because that seam on the left side of our screen opens up, drop his eyes and automatically take off as a runner. Now, maybe he feels that left tackle, but I'd like to see a climb. And again, the end result is he gathers himself and gets that shallow cross off. But I think that's one of the things that has been lost in this conversation is all these guys are talented. Caleb was the number one kid coming out of high school. Jaden, the number one kid coming out of high school. JJ, the number five kid coming out of high school. Drake, the number nine kid coming out of high school. You're trying to figure out and find, why would these young men fail? What would be their flaw? And I think Jaden, at moments, doesn't happen often, drops his eyes to become a runner too soon. I think that is something that is very fixable for him at the next level.
To the point, again, Dan, you've been repeatedly saying, the tape that we showed you was the one that we had the nitpick on. You've been repeatedly saying you think he's the best quarterback in this class. So to be clear, that's just the tape that we showed there quickly, in case there's any confusion. Mel, very quickly back to you. If Drake May is the name, for people who are saying Drake May is a better prospect than Jaden Daniels, what do you say?
I say no, absolutely not. And I think for Dano's point, Jaden made even progress in terms of keeping those eyes up. So I'm all Jaden. Jaden's durability, I know the angular frame, but hey, if you're going up against AOGs, you survive. Now you're in the NFL, I get that. I think protect that frame. He didn't do it a couple times, Dano, but he will in the NFL. Yep. Jaden, to me, just look at how he played, how he performed. And I like Drake May. I love the upside, love all the talent. But late in the year, those struggles made me go with Jaden with an exclamation point as my second overall quarterback in this draft.
All right, we will see. Again, I think RG3's point is the right one. The indication of how much the league thinks of Jaden Daniels is that we all expect if Drake May is the second pick, there will be a mad dash. Like, what was the gold rush? Like, everyone racing out west? And there will be a mad dash to try and trade up with New England. We'll see if that winds up happening. We'll bring the group back in a couple of minutes to talk more about it. In the meantime, will it be one and done for LeBron and the Lakers? Do the Nuggets have their number? Is there any way that LeBron's Lakers can win this series? We'll do that. Plus, the Rodgers relaunch. Dan will tell you what the Jets must do on Thursday night to help their quarterback. And he's the one who's got it right. Please, please, at One Jets Drive, be listening and get up on ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Back on Get Up, we are presented by ESPN Bet as we approach the bottom of the hour. Let's play a game of more or less, looking ahead to game 2's of the NBA playoff first round tonight. Alan Hahn, if I set the number at 30.5 points for Jalen Brunson, which way are you going?
I'm going to go less because the Sixers have been playing him really well all season, especially Kelly Oubre holding him to 29% effective field goal percentage now in 5 games. Their whole scheme is to slow him down. It's going to be hard for him to get the 30.
Let's stay in that game, Jay Will. 29.5, the number for Joel Embiid. More or less?
Well, I'll say if he plays, which I don't think he'll play tonight, but I would say more if he were to play. He's a force down low on the block. There's nobody that the Knicks have that can actually stop him. As much as I love Mitchell Robinson, like, he cannot engage with the physicality and the size, ultimately, of Joel Embiid.
This is one of those games that may be decided in the warm-ups.
Yeah.
When we see the layup line, we'll have a sense of what's going to happen. Let's go to another game tonight. Alan, 41.5 is the number total points, rebounds, and assists for LeBron in game 2.
I'm going to take the over on this one because he almost got it. Actually, I think it was 41 in game 1. And if guys make some shots off his passes, he would have had more assists. So I just think he's got to continue to play at that level, and I think he will because – you know, LeBron does not like losing to people, and he has not beaten Denver now in, what, 9 straight games?
9 straight games. I'll show you the numbers. 9 straight wins for the Nuggets over the Lakers. 5 of those, including game 1 here, were by double digits. Nikola Jokic averaging a triple-double during that span. Here is LeBron on his mindset heading into game 2.
I don't ever get into here-we-go-again mindset. You know, it's one game. They protected their home court. We have another opportunity on Monday. To come back and be better. We know how challenging it's going to be. We know how difficult this opponent is and how great they are. So that's all a part of the game. Start doubting. I don't get into the doubt mindset. That's not me. I'm the wrong guy to ask.
All right, and so Jay Will and Alan Hahn with us here again. Jay doing something that I would always, my whole life, I would love to be able to do. You'll teach me later. Okay, let's dive into this. Earlier this morning, we argued again over whether or not the Lakers should have ducked Denver. At the bottom line of it is Alan and I are right, but we're never going to go back to that. It didn't happen, so let's go forward.
Okay.
I don't think any of us think the Lakers are going to win or can't. How do they win? If we're in here tomorrow morning talking about a Laker win in game 2 on the road, what will we be saying they did?
2 things. I think you need Rui to be extremely active on that individual matchup with Joker. I deny him the ball, making touches difficult for him. I think Nikola Jokic is the best game manager in the game of basketball today. And then secondly, I'll say about D'Angelo Russell, and mark this down. There are times when I watch D'Lo play defensively, and it reminds me of how third and fourth graders play. I am serious. It's like he is spinning around. There are no defensive principles when watching him play. And when KCP got going in that late third quarter run, there are a lot of mishaps that come from having D'Angelo Russell on the court. So he needs to make shots, and he needs to be assertive because you need a third scorer, him or Austin Reaves, to really help carry that load for this team offensively.
Yeah, I was going to talk about D'Lo, but also, you know, I put a lot of pressure on Anthony Davis in this series. And I thought he did everything he could in that game. I'll give him credit because he and Jokic played stats of 30, 10, and 5 that you haven't seen in the playoffs since Wilt versus Russell. That's how big that was. So when you say, what has to change? Well, AD continues to play like that. LeBron plays like he did. It's D'Angelo Russell. Now, why do guys get lose focus on defense? Because they go 1-for-9 from 3. They're 6-for-24 from the field. Like, they aren't making shots, and it messes their head. He has been terrible. Not bad. Terrible against the Nuggets now in 5 straight playoff games where the numbers tell you he's 3-for-24 from 3-point range. It's going to mess with your head. If they're going to win, he's got to have a good game. It's got to start with him.
They basically benched him in the conference final a year ago.
Yes.
And he's been playing great. I mean, the reality is he has really been playing great the last few weeks. He was a big part of the reason why they won that play-in game the other night.
I just want to make sure we dig into great, because when we start saying great, like,
well enough.
Well, yeah, well enough.
25 a game down the stretch.
Yeah, he's playing well offensively, but this question around him is defensively. Now, when you get into the playoffs, it's about can everybody guard their particular possession? And that's
perhaps
a problem for him.
And Jay, you guard better when you make shots. That's just the reality of basketball.
Here's the other thing I'll say. Look, I mean, D'Lo, yes. Does he have to play better? Sure. Would that help enormously? Anthony Davis played as well as he can play.
Yes.
The problem is the other guy's just better. They're up against the best player in the world. Nikola Jokic is the best basketball player who's currently walking the face of planet Earth. To beat him, you have to do something even better than
Greeny,
your best.
They're not good enough to do it. But they also have AD and LeBron, two of the better players. Like, I think if you're going to pick players, You go Jokic first. The next two are Lakers if you're picking players. And that's no disrespect to Jamal Murray, but it's LeBron and it's AD. So they have the second two best players. So they have enough, if you think about it on paper. It does, though, come up with guys like, again, Russell and others have to do more to overcome this.
I think this game is going to be one in the margins for the Lakers, like offensive rebounding, you know, getting back in transition defense, not giving up 21 points in transition. It comes down to effort and character, frankly. And LeBron James and AD are playing that way. But Greeny, those next three guys, the Austin Reeves, you know, you talk about the D-Lows, you talk about, you know, Rui Hachimura, like they have to be phenomenal energy-wise and attention to detail. If they're not, they're not going to win these games.
I hear you. On some level, though, there's a part of me that just wants to say, like, sometimes the other guy's just too good. Like, this is the reason. I let's not even go down this road. Yes, it's a close game. But to your point,
so was
in the margins,
playoffs.
The Nuggets are better. I don't know how much better than that Anthony Davis and LeBron can play.
How
much better than that can those two guys play? And they still lost.
Can they get a win in the series? To me, is the instead of can they win the series, I really think now it's become can they get a win in the series? Is it in their head? No. But is it also in their head that they are playing against a team that they match up terribly with? I think that absolutely is true. What you're hoping for is the Nuggets just have a bad game, which they haven't in nine straight games.
You're going to have to get an out-of-body experience from either LeBron or AD. Maybe. Both those guys have to play well, and I'm still telling you, it comes even if those guys play at a high level like they did in game one, the ancillary pieces need to bring it for them to have a chance to win it down the stretch.
In a related story, we all like the Nuggets tonight in game two. Okay, that's not an overreaction. Let's do Overreaction Monday. Where's Graziano? Here we go. Dan, NFL draft is 3 days and counting away. If I were to say the Patriots should trade down from the third overall pick, would that be an overreaction?
Yes, it's an overreaction, as long as we don't know what's going on in the first two picks ahead of them and how they feel about all three of the top quarterbacks, or all four of the top quarterbacks. If they can find a guy they think is their franchise quarterback for the long term, and their organization truly believes that, then the right move is to sit tight and take him, no matter how many other roster holes they have. They can figure it out. Problems get a lot easier to solve when you have the quarterback.
Fair enough. Next up, if I were to say the Bills need to trade up for a wide receiver, would that be an overreaction?
I think it is an overreaction because all we're hearing about is the quality depth at the wide receiver position in this year's draft. I think the Bills are going to be okay sitting tight at pick 28, finding somebody they really like, and I think they have a lot of other needs to fill. This was a big roster turnover offseason for them, and there are other positions they need to address.
Names that you might hear down there, Brian Thomas, Adonai Mitchell, Xavier Leggett, Xavier Worthy.
Yep.
Those are all late first-round pick wide receivers. Finally, let's stay in the division. If I were to say the Jets need to draft an offensive lineman and not someone who catches passes at number 10, is that an overreaction?
No, I don't think it's an overreaction. I think it's very important that they take care of their offensive line. You know, even if they signed two starters at tackle in free agency, you have to have depth there. Rare is the team that gets through the season with the same starting five offensive linemen starting every snap. The Jets know this as well as anyone. It has cost them significantly in recent years. You have a 40-year-old quarterback coming off a major injury, and you don't know how long he's going to play. I think it's important to have offensive linemen stacked up there in that building.
That video we were showing you there, a couple of different players, Troy Fatanu, who's coming out of Washington, Talisi Fuaga, who's coming out of Oregon State, a couple of players who might be offensive linemen getting drafted in that area. Joe Alt, we would expect to be long gone by the time the Jets pick at number 10. So, Robert, do you agree that what the Jets must do at number 10 is pick an offensive lineman to protect Aaron Rodgers?
Greeny, absolutely. I mean, would you let your kid eat ice cream for breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Absolutely not, because that's bad parenting. When you look at what the Jets need, they need a full course meal of depth building on their roster because five of their 11 current starters right now have had season-ending injuries in the past two seasons. I'm talking about Joe Alt actually might be there, Greeny, if we have a run on quarterbacks and the receivers start pushing down the draft order there, they might have an opportunity to bring him in. But when you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, who is coming off of an Achilles injury, and the situation with your team currently, you have to build that depth. I know you love the Jets, Greeny, and they are certainly on track to potentially make a Super Bowl run with the roster that they currently have. But they can't eat ice cream for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They can't go out there and try to get another skill guy for Aaron Rodgers to throw the football to. They got to protect the old man and allow him to put his best foot forward including the one that had the Achilles tear.
Look, if Joe Alt is still on the board, I'll run the pickup there for them. Lewis can handle it. Lewis and Mel and Booger can take it. I'll go running the pickup there for them if they're still there at number 10. Now, Dan, if you look at a lot of the projections, including from Rich Cimini, who covers the Jets for us, have the Jets taking a pass catcher, either Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia, or if somehow he's available, Rome Odunze, the wide receiver from Washington. What do you think of that, Dan?
That would be a mistake. This is the second easiest pick in the draft, the first one being Chicago, or at least predictable. Chicago taking Caleb. The second one would be the Jets taking offensive linemen. Go back to last year's football season and go watch the Jets' first four snaps of the season. All right, it wasn't going to be a pretty year. At least it didn't look to be. Now, go back to the Los Angeles Rams season last year in comparison to the one before. Why did Matthew Stafford play so much better? Because their offensive line got so much better. Go back a couple years ago when Tom Brady was in Tampa Bay. Why did he play and win the MVP? Because his offensive line protected him. This is a very simple decision. Joe Douglas has done a really good job. This would be a mistake if he takes anything but an offensive lineman. I think two teams out of 32 last year had all 17 weeks starting five offensive linemen. This is very simple. The Jets take an offensive lineman and protect Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, almost no one ever does. And Dan, you know, the reality is that they might be able to move back and still get some of the guys. If the guy they want isn't sitting there at 10, let's say Joe Alt, there are a lot of good interior offensive linemen. If someone wants to come up there, I can see the Jets trading back and taking a couple of players.
Sure, it'd be easier for them to trade back than trade up because they don't have that second round pick. But what you're hearing about the Jets is about pass catchers.
Yes.
Cimini has mentioned it multiple times. Could that mean Bowers? Could that mean a competition with the Bears, who are picking at number 9, to see if you can get up and get one of the stud receivers, right? You maybe have to leapfrog the Bears to do it. So, yeah, if pass catcher and another explosive weapon for Aaron Rodgers is on their minds, they're going to be in position to take a swing at it.
I know that. Look, Aaron Rodgers is one of the great throwers of the football of all time, but I've never seen him do it lying flat on his back, and that is exactly where he will wind up if that's what they wind up doing. Meanwhile, we'll talk about another quarterback next. Is J.J. McCarthy the most polarizing top prospect in this draft? Is he worthy of a top 5 pick? We'll answer that question after we see if Graziano can answer this one. We missed you last week while you were away, Dan. Sneaky Hembo is ready. Who was the last quarterback who was drafted in the top 10 that did not start a single game as a rookie? I'm going to say that's a fair question.
I do.
Answers next. Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
You're watching Get Up. We are presented by ESPN Bet. All right, it's a good question this week that we like here with Graziano back. Hambo's ready for him. Who was the last quarterback who was drafted in the top 10 that did not start a single game as a rookie?
This is a very good question and a difficult one, right? I mean, like Trey Lance started, I think, one or two. Like it's not that recent. The draft I go back to where everybody lost their minds and overdrafted quarterbacks in the first round was 2011. And it was Blaine Gabbert and Christian Ponder and Jake Locker all went way too high. And I remember that Jake Locker
was already walking out of the room. He's walking out of the room in dismay.
How does he know which one I'm going to say? I remember that Jake Locker didn't start a game. I believe he was the 8th pick.
You are a machine. It is Jake Locker, the eighth pick in the 2011 draft. You are better at this than any,
come on,
than any human being is at anything.
Only question was, did anyone do it since? But that was,
I thought of Carson Palmer in Cincinnati when they had Dan Kitna. I was saying John Kitna.
Yeah.
Was the starter there, but this was much more recent.
Yeah.
You are that was an incredible pull. Really good. Hembo, if indeed you knocked him out for my radio show today, then you definitely did me a favor.
Just sitting in the dark.
Not to mention everyone listening.
It's Aaron Rodgers.
Okay, so that's hot off the presses. So is this. Our very own Jordan Reed has released his final mock draft. He did the full 7 rounds, God bless him. And here's a look at his top 10. Take a look at number 8. He has J.J. McCarthy falling farther than most of the mocks that I have seen, falling down to 8 where Minnesota goes up and gets him in a trade with Atlanta. That would be a little further down and a little easier deal to make than the one we were talking earlier about, where they would have to move all the way up much higher. Let me bring up my crew back in here, including Mel Kiper, the man who invented the draft. Mel, how about that? McCarthy, I mean, you talk to everyone around the league, as of course does Graziano and everyone else. Do you believe McCarthy is going to go in the top 6? If we put the Giants at 6, this would be an upset to me. Do you see McCarthy slipping past 6?
I don't right now, and I think he should. I have him at 15 on a big board. I think it is overdrafting, as Dan was talking about, happens all the time in the National Football League. But there's a lot to like about J.J. I have him at 15. It's not because he's a reject. This kid made plays under stress on third down. When he had to on fourth down against Alabama, he did. He's ultra-competitive like Josh Allen. But in the top 10, top 5, too rich for me. Certainly, I do think, you know, come Thursday night, he goes somewhere within that top 5 or 6 overall, which surprised me if he dropped down a little further than that, but I think he should based on grade and the way he finished up, like I said, at 15 on my big board. And certainly, overdrafting is what we see in the National Football League time in and time out. It will happen again this year.
It's funny because that would be the opposite of most of the sort of conventional wisdom that we've been hearing. Orlovsky, I've heard much less about McCarthy falling than I've heard about him rising. If J.J. McCarthy, Dan, were to go up into the top 3, let's live in a world where McCarthy gets picked ahead of Drake May. What will your reaction to that be?
I won't be shocked, Greeny. I think that if you're a team that takes J.J. McCarthy ahead of Drake May, you're sitting there going, the flaws of Drake May and the mechanical issues we don't want to have to try and fix. J.J. McCarthy, I don't know the conversation around him and what's not to like. Like, I'll tell you this, if he goes and gets drafted by the Giants at 6, he's their best quarterback on the team by far. Most talented quarterback on the team by far. I don't understand how a guy that's always in rhythm, has an absolute rocket arm, really good accuracy, elite athleticism, was the 5th-ranked quarterback coming out of high school football. I don't know why people don't view him a little bit more in a positive fashion, and there's not much to not like about him. I just think he's a superior physical talent, and that's one of my complaints, is people have talked about him like he's not a physically talented young man. He is an elite physical talent.
Robert, how about it? How about J.J. McCarthy relative to the other? Take Caleb out of the conversation, because we clearly know where he's going. How about him relative to Jaden Daniels and Drake May as a prospect?
Yeah, Greeny, I think the reason people are so skeptical about J.J. McCarthy is because they didn't feel like they saw enough of what they saw from the other guys on tape. Remember all those Alabama quarterbacks who would go on to win national championships, but they didn't really do much when they were in college, and then they get to the NFL and didn't pan out for them? I think they're using that against J.J., but what they have to understand about J.J. McCarthy is when he first went to Michigan, he was deemed that guy, super athletic runner, and he's developed himself into a guy who's not afraid to make the simple plays to play winning football. NFL executives have told me that when they watch J.J. play, they get excited because they know he has all of the intangibles. They know he has all the physical skill sets that the other guys have. He just wasn't asked to do it all the time. So if they select him and he pans out the way they think he will, they become geniuses. So I do think that that J.J. McCarthy is actually worthy of a top 5 pick. I don't think that it's a reach to pick him at 5, 6, 7, 8. I think it's a reach if you go and trade multiple assets to go up and get him, because now you're hurting your team and hurting your quarterback when he comes in there. But I am fully on board. J.J. McCarthy is a special talent, and I think he'll be a better pro than he ever was a college quarterback.
Graziano is physically co-signing what you were saying.
Yes.
He's agreeing. Mel, how about it? What is it? when you have him, because you have the other three quarterbacks relatively significantly higher on your big board, what is it that separates them from McCarthy for you?
Well, I think if you look at the wow moments, he had a few. Certainly the Alabama game, what he did in that Washington game, national title game, with his legs, he flipped field position, which was critical in that football game. There were little subtle things that he had to do. And like I said, he was stressed. He was in an offense that didn't revolve around him. They put him in third down. They made him make the plays, or they were punting, or they were losing games against Alabama on that fourth down. So I'm at 15. I don't dislike J.J. McCarthy. I just think the other kids have more talent, have done it. When they needed to carry a team, they showed they could do it. When J.J. had to make a play, J.J. did. So I think we get into this where you hate somebody or you love somebody. I don't hate J.J. McCarthy. I like the kid. I just have him at 15. The board rankings protect you from overdrafting. And let somebody else take J.J. If I'm wrong, be the first to admit it. I would say to the guys, when you rank the players, where would he be on your board? When you do that, and that exercise, that puts everybody in a ranking with other positions. And then you say, okay, he's at 15. I can't take him at 5-6 when a guy's at 15 on the board. Let somebody else take him. I like him. I don't love him. And that's the way I feel right now about J.J. McCarthy.
Go ahead, Dan.
If J.J. McCarthy goes to Minnesota, he's the front runner for Offensive Rookie of the Year from day one, from the moment they take him. Two, the difference between like a J.J. McCarthy and a Drake May is you can take J.J. McCarthy and right away he's going to play and you don't have to worry about a ton of development. With Drake May, you're going to have to develop him physically and mechanically. And that's going to be a task that we've seen this in the NFL. Sometimes it just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen for a Mitchell Trubisky. It doesn't happen for a Trey Lance. Rarely do we see a player that is this physically talented and structurally sound like J.J. fail.
Yeah, and we've seen it with Brian Daboll doing it with Josh Allen, which is why I keep saying the Giants should find a way to get him. Quick final word, Graziano.
If you got to get to 4 or 5 to get him, it's a lot easier for the Giants to do that than it is for the Vikings or the Raiders or who else is down there looking for
Denver, Broncos. Anybody
right,
else.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Well, all these answers are coming your way on Thursday night, and we will be there right in the middle of all of it. As always, we'll have every pick on ESPN along with our usual expert analysis. The crew will be there. The draft, of course, is also available on ABC and on NFL Network. On ABC, they'll be focusing on the prospects' journey through the draft. They'll be covering. First Take is coming up. Stephen A. on the Knicks and Sixers and Lakers and Nuggets. Molly, Stephen A., Shannon, Big Perk, and more, top of the hour here on ESPN.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Get Up is presented by ESPN. Back to the official sportsbook of ESPN. And before we call it a day, let's one more time feast our eyes on by far the best thing that happened this weekend. She is Red Panda. She's the most incredible athlete in the world.
She's been doing this since 1993. So, Jay, yes, she was doing games. Halftime of your games, they were wooden bowls then, though.
I was 11.
Bowls, come on.
How'd she do that?
By wooden bowls.
More so, she sticks to landing in heels.
She
comes down better in heels and
glowing
doesn't
balance.
See you tomorrow. First Take starts now.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.